give us a little history of the petroleum that was discovered around Fremont, and also the year and the procedures that took place in the discovery of oil out on the Canales Ranch.
In the early 30s, I think it was 1933 or 34, I think it was 34, St. Clair had drilled a well out here about 3 miles northwest of Fremont on the Seligson. And it caught on fire on them. It was oil. And it burned there for several months. They finally drilled a directional hole and cut and put it out, but it left a great big crater there. Later on, they moved on further northwest, about 7 or 8 miles on the Frank Bennett place, and they found some production there around 2,200 or 2,300 feet, and later became the Tom Graham field, and they had 25 or 30 wells there. And about latter part of 37, or the first part of 38, well, they drilled a well on east of the railroad track. It was drilled by I believe Magnolia at that time, and St. Clair together. And they went down to around 6,000-7,000 feet. I don't quite recall the depth. And that well also blew out, but it was natural gas, and it blew there for quite a while. And they finally got some firefighters to come out of Oklahoma, it was Tulsa, Oklahoma, I believe, and they put that one out. And then in the early 1941, before that, there was a well drilled by Transwestern Oil Company east of part of our ranch and north of part of the Canales Ranch. And they made a gas well and shut it in. It was about 6,000 foot deep. And then the Sun Oil Company, I think it was 41 when they drilled the first well. And I think the discovery well was at 5,200 or 5,300, somewhere in there.
This is well number one right out
on the Peak Canales, yes. Uh-huh. On the Peak Canales, which was part of the range, and made a pretty good little well there. It was on the Frio sand, the upper Frio sand, which later on the Transwestern went into their location where they had made a gas well. They went back there and shot that same sand and made a producer out of it. And they drilled number two, and then number three, I think, along the west side of the ranch, and then the Shell Oil Company came in there and drilled their number one Seligson, and then the moves started, and Transwestern started drilling on the Seligson, and Sunray had Richardson had some on the west of the railroad track, and Mobile, Magnolia at that time, they drilled all the north part of the Seligson Ranch, where the Seligson, which is a Seligson field now, it's on the Peak Canales and the Seligson Ranch. But that was in 41 when that was the first well came in on the Canales Ranch.
Does Texaco presently have a lease there on the Peak Canales, the head of Canales?
No. Texaco came in about 1942 and started drilling on the Tijerina, which is part of the Canales Ranch. Belonged to Erlinda Canales, my father's sister. Texaco had 3,000 acres, and they started drilling there in 42. And then in 43, they started on the other part of the ranch, and the south part of the ranch was on my father's track.
Número cinco?
Número cinco, yeah.
That's where my mother and father live now.
Yes, that's where your father and mother live now. And of course, part of the ranch is under the Tijerina Canales Bomb Blucher Field. And the other part of the ranch is under the Silkson Field. I'd say about 10,000 acres of the ranch are under production, or more.
Would you say that there's more oil, petroleum than gas, or would you say at that time, and also elaborate on what the perspective of outlook would be towards the future as far as the diminishing of the natural resources?
Well, Pete, at that time, gas wasn't much. You had gas and there wasn't hardly any sale for it.
That was around
1941, 42, plumbing to 19, well, I'd say in the last 10, 12 years is we had a run on gas, but in 1948, the Railroad Commission gave the oil companies down here 6 months, I think, to quit firing gas. This area down here was, every well had a flare. And there were so many wells that it looked like a little city here. That field did, the Silkson Field and the Tijerina Field and the Tijerina Canales. So the Railroad Commission passed an ordinance that said that they either they had to do some with the gas, and they didn't have a big market for gas in 47 or 48, and so they had to build a plant to where they could run all that gas to more, and all the companies, I think, got together and they unitized the gas in the Silkson Field. And they built the plant, which is about 2.5 miles north of town here, called now the Mobile Plant. And at that time, Magnolia operated the plant, and they unitized the gas. And later in the 1956, I believe, they unitized the oil in the Silkson Field. And which has enabled the oil companies for better recovery by repression from one end of the field to pumping salt water in the lower end of the field, of the Silkson Field. And they enabled to get them to get a lot more oil out of the sand than they would have if they had just gone ahead and produced them. And at a normal speed without repression or pumping salt water back into the sand to push your oil up.
Water jet.
What do they call water? Cut it off a minute and I'll think of it.
This practice was called
water drive. Yeah. And to answer you, as to the future of this field, I couldn't tell you, Pete, except that I know they have had the secondary recovery already pretty well going and pretty much to the end of the that recovery, but their outcomes are entertaining a third type of discovery, recovery, which I'm not too well acquainted with, and I don't understand it too much.
Uncle Gus, in your estimation, could you give us an opinion or a history of how the Canales family was able to keep hold of their land during all the hardships that took place at the beginning of the 19th century when the land was purchased, and if any land during the history of the Canales holdings were ever sold, and what the circumstances were behind these, behind the selling of purchases.
Pete, the Canales, my grandfather's property, was first a state ranch of 160 acres. That's where La Cabra Ranch is now. And then he purchased land around that, that section there, and he purchased all the land, the rest of the land, nearly 14,000 acres, and some of them was traded. For instance, the town site of Fremont was on my grandfather's land, and he traded with the Seligson Ranch because the railroad kind of split the property and left very little property of the Canales on the west side of the railroad track. So the Seligson traded my grandfather about 1,000 acres in north of the ranch for about 1,000 acres where the railroad where Fremont is. And I don't know I know good management, I guess, kept them, and good neighbors, kept them from getting in hot water. Although my great-grandfather, Sabas Cavazos, he sold what they call the Veladeros Ranch and the Canelo Ranch, the King Ranch, in about 1888, I believe, for 25 cents an acre. I don't recall the amount of acreage, but it was way up there, which is, some of it is King Ranch Edition number 1, number 2, number 3, and 4 is west of Ricardo and in that area there. That was a Veladeros Ranch that belonged to my grandmother's, my father's side, father. And they sold it to him for so much down, I don't recall how much down. And then 15 years with Vanderleen's notes. And sometime during the This was done to help finance Porfirio Diaz in his revolution in Mexico. Then in 1991, they had a drought. King Ranch got an extension of 2 years because they couldn't make the payments. And they gave him an extension of 2 years, so instead of getting it out by 1903, I think they finished paying for it in 1905. But as far as I remember a two-story house that they had out there at the ranch that burned down back in the 40s. That had a lookout tower on the off of the second floor, and that people used to get up there and look around all day long and night, too, as far as that goes. And I imagine they did that for bandits or Indians or whatever was at that time. Existed, you know, there were quite a lot of cattle rustling and so forth, but and horse thieves. I don't recall, I never did ask when they did build that ranch house. Well, my father was born in Las Montas, which is right off of the Canelo, part of the Veladeros Ranch, which is straight east and southwest of Ricardo there, and we still have the 240 acres left there that they didn't sell the King Ranch. We're still on there.
Does the King Ranch pay a lease to the family for that land?
Yes, they do, and they've been paying it for years. I know of, since my father died, well, it's been about 22 years, and they've been paying it. I've been receiving it before my father collected it from the King Ranch.
Do they pay grazing rights for this? Or
grazing rights.
For cattle?
Cattle. But I imagine one of the things that we had was very good neighbors, and that we were surrounded by good neighbors, and the bandits had to hit them first before they ever hit us. Either hit the King Ranch or Seligson's or the Halterman's, which were west of Fremont, and Bon Blucher was south of us. And the King Ranch was south, part of it was south of us, so we were surrounded by good neighbors.
Uncle Gus, I want to thank you for taking time out to present this interview. I think it's very interesting. I'm sure it'll be beneficial to historians for in the future. This recording will be presented to the ANI History Department, in which Dr. Colson, I will present to Dr. Colson, and he can keep it on file at Texas A&I University. Thank you very much.
I want to tell you that if I'd had a little more time, we could have got dates and places where we could have maybe done a little better job than what we did here.
Oh, well, this was original, and I think the for the first time, this was a very presentable tape. I hope it will be as interesting to the history department as it was to me. Thank you very much. The person I chose to interview was Mr. Gus Canales, who is my uncle, who was born and raised around Fremont. In this interview, we dealt with the schools, the means of transportation, the farming industry, the oil and gas industry, the churches and the doctors and things that were around at this time, preferably around the year of 1920s and later 30s.
I was northeast of Fremont here, and on February the 15th, 1913, Jim Wells County.
Uncle Gus, can you tell us a little bit of the background of the schools that you attended at this time, as far back as you can remember?
I attended Fremont Grammar School. Enrolled in 1920 when my father moved into Fremont from a ranch, so we could all attend school here in the town. My father was Albino T. Canales. My mother was Rafaela Garcia Canales. And we moved into Fremont the latter part of 1919, after the storm of 1919.
Did you tell us, do you remember anything about the first grade, what it was like, the building and the structure, and approximately how many kids were in the first grade?
Well, there were about, the first year I went to school in a frame building, and there were just the first grade. Used to be somebody's residence. I don't quite recall whose residence that was, but there were about 16 of us in the first grade. All were Latin American boys there going to that first grade. And we had a Latin American teacher. Her name was Vicenta Gonzalez. She was from Fremont. Second year, we moved over into a brick building, which was a grammar school and high school combined. And my second grade teacher was Mrs. Lindsay. Second year of school, we were integrated, or you might say, the Anglos and the Latins went together in the second grade, went to school together in the second grade, and from there on.
Was there any discrimination at this time between the kids, or was everybody more or less on good terms?
No, everybody was in pretty good terms. We never had much discrimination, never have had here in Fremont. We got along fine. We were all on a friendly basis, everybody, and we never did have much discrimination that we knew of. At least it wasn't experienced by the kids.
Until how did you all get to school? What was the your means of transportation to and from school?
We walked.
Were there any wagons, or people ride their horses to school at this time?
Yeah, there was several kids rode their horses, and others came in buggies. I think my sisters both came in buggies a year before I started school from the ranch. They came in a two-wheel buggy for a while, and then they came in a little wagon that they used there, a four-wheel wagon.
Were there any cars? Were there very many cars at this time?
No, there was my grandfather had a case.
Was that
Papa Andres?
Yes. Papa Andres Canales had a case, 7 passenger, but he only took that out once in a while. And then there were Model Ts. My father had a Model T. And my uncle Andres, who was my father's brother, had a Model T. And I think they bought those secondhand. And the other, only other car in town was Tomas Perez, who had a little taxi, Model T taxi.
Uncle Gus was, could you go over the farming methods and the various crops that were raised at this time?
Well, the main crop here was a cotton crop. And they raised corn, but mostly to, not for market, mostly for home use. And they raised beans for home use. And cane for home use. There were, my grandfather had about 15 or 20 sharecroppers, and it was required that they would plant enough vegetables to live on each farmer, and they also were required to plant a certain amount of corn and a certain amount of cotton and cane too, to feed the mules and horses, which we used to plow with and cultivate the land with.
Now, is this this was Papa Andres you're speaking?
Yeah,
of?
My grandfather and my father both farmed at the same time.
At this time, was the Canales estate? This included La Cabra Número Cinco.
Los Ramojos, and Las Mujeres.
Las Mujeres.
And in 1922 or 23, when they purchased Baluarte, which included Baluarte too.
How many acres would you say did this encompass before it was divided up?
Well, I've never figured it up, but I imagine in the neighborhood of 30,000 to 40,000.
Mm-hmm. We will elaborate on the division of the ranches within the family members later on. This is just to get primary information on what the how the ranch was operated and what it consisted of. Was there a bank in Fremont at this time? And if there was, who helped establish it?
There was a bank here in the later teens, and my grandfather helped establish it, and also a fellow by name of Askew and several other people here in town formed this bank, and then bank didn't go, so my grandfather went ahead and bought it out and closed the bank and paid off the depositors. But I don't recall what year that was in, but it was before 1920. Later, I don't recall what year because I was a very young kid, but there was a bank, the Fremont State Bank, established by Mr. Fremont, Mr. Charlie Laughlin, and Mr. Alden, that operated here till the 1933, and they at that time they closed and they paid off all their depositors.
Is that during the Depression?
Yes, but they nobody lost any money at that bank either.
No, Uncle Gus, were there very many phones
established here in the community of Premont at this time when you were growing up?
I think there were four or five phones. My father had one. My grandfather had one at the store. And I don't remember who the other ones were, but Falfrey's was our operator. That used to be what we call the center for the phone. And we used to get rings on it, one ring or one and a half or two and three and four and five. Later on, my grandfather put one at the house, but it was a party line, and then Falfrey's would call Alice, and that's where you got your calls out of here.
What kind of store did Papa Andres have?
He had a general merchandise store. They handled everything imaginable there, just like one of the supermarkets. They handled Model T parts, wagon wheels, wagon parts,
clothes,
wedding dresses, and perfumes and whatever, cosmetics of all kinds, and dry good yarn, or whatever you want to call it, material to make dresses out of and shirts and so forth.
Uncle Gus, was there any hurricanes that you can remember when you were a young boy?
Well, I remember the one very well in 1919. My father and mother and our family had gone to Cibo Ranch, 15 miles west of Premont, to see my grandmother on my mother's side, and we stayed over there during the hurricane because it caught us there, and we had a Model T, brand new Model T Ford, and I remember the top coming off of it, and we stayed in the frame house that swayed from the side to side there. Every time the wind would catch it, we'd let it make that house sway. It was a frame house, but it withheld the storm.
How were the law enforcement agencies at this time? Could you elaborate a little bit on any the criminals or raids or the bandits and the effectiveness of the law enforcement, who they were and what their duties were?
I don't remember who was sheriff at the time, but I remember back in the one incident that my father was I don't recall whether he was a special ranger or working for the federal government on picked up slackers. What they call slackers are people who left the country, draft dodgers is what they call them now. And they used to use the ranch there, and they had a pole out there at the ranch where they chained this prisoners, and then they take them to either Laredo or Corpus Christi. And the our place was kind of a ranger's headquarters.
Do you remember any incidents that you can remember right offhand that your father told you about concerning these prisoners, where there was a lot of danger involved, or any times that while he was a law officer that you can remember any close calls?
Yeah, I remember I was, I guess, 4 years old or maybe five when they had one draft dodger there at the house. He was at the barn, and he was tied to this post with a chain, and my daddy brought him some supper, and I came with my daddy, and My father was only had one hand, the left hand, and the right hand was shot out with a firecracker. So when my father handed this guy his plate of food, well, this guy, instead of taking the plate of food, he jerked his pistol out of his holster. And it started up a pretty big fight there, and my mother had to come up there and take my father away from a prisoner.
Uncle Gus, do you remember who the first doctor was in Fremont to practice medicine at this time?
Well, I remember the first doctor that I saw in Fremont was Dr. Collins. There were doctors would come here from Alice. His name was Dr. Strickland. He'd came on emergencies, and but it'd take quite a while. And then Dr. Collins, I think, came here in the 20s or 1920. And he was just a country doctor. He served the people very well, and if they had money, he would take it. If they didn't have, he would let it carry them. And then when he collected from the people who did have money, he would get out and buy medicine for people who didn't have it, have any money.
How about some of the remedies that were performed at this time in case the doctor couldn't get there? How soon were most youngsters taught how to take care of themselves in case of a snake bite or things of this nature? Were most kids at this time taught first aid until a doctor could get there, being that there was such a shortage of medical doctors throughout the state?
Well, I think we were taught to take care of ourselves with reference to snake bites when we were practically right after we could, we went outside. I remember one incident that we were out at this ranch, Silver Ranch, and my grandfather just cut a finger off of one of my aunts who had been bit by a rattlesnake. And they used a lot of Don Pedrito Jaramillo's remedies in this country at that time. They thought the world of you. And they used those and a lot of home remedies, which people would tell each other about, and that's the way they took care of themselves till the doctor came. And then he was called on every time somebody got sick in this country.
For those of you people that may not be familiar with Don Pedrito Jaramillo, this was a person that lived back in the old days, and he was considered a healer. And a lot of his practices were, he just used common sense, but he was more or less ahead of his time. And I know there's one story that my mother has told me about her grandmother being real sick at one time. Are you familiar with that story? If you would, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about it.
Well, my grandmother on my father's side was had a very high fever and not expected to live. And by that time, I had an uncle who was a doctor, Dr. Jose Garcia. And Dr. Atkins lived in Falfurrias. They both decided she wouldn't, there was nothing they can do for her. So my father went to see Don Pedrito, which practically joined the ranch on the south side of the ranch, and asked him what they should do for her. So he told them to get some ice and bathe and put her in ice water in a tub. And so my father went on to Fowl and brought some ice and took it out there to La Cabra Ranch, and where they lived at that time. And doctor said she'd die if she'd catch pneumonia, and there's no way of bringing her fever down. And so my grandfather decided that since they had both said she didn't have a chance, might as well bathe her in this ice water, and her fever went down, and my grandmother lived to 1928.
Uncle Gus, could you tell us a little bit about the cattle raising practices of our ancestors that established the ranch?
Well, my grandfather had this ranch, which was La Cabra Ranch, which was about 14,000 to 15,000 acres. And he also had the Barwate Ranch, which my father ran all the ranches for him. And then my father and my uncle, Joe, J.T. Canales, they had a partnership with cattle at Las Mujeres Ranch. And my father and Andres Canales Jr. had a partnership at Los Tramojos Ranch. And they raised some white-faced Herefords and Texas Longhorns. They used to have quite a lot of steer. I remember a lot of steer at Los Tramojos that were Longhorn cattle. And
Did they ever ship their cattle on any long cattle drives?
Well, they had them, but I didn't know too much about them. I used to ship to Fort Worth
by
rail here, because we got rail in here around 1909. The only cattle drive that I remember that was back in either 26 or 27, they drove a bunch of cattle to Marble Falls, because there was a drought here, one of those years, and they drove them over there for pasture. And I think they lost a few head on the way, but it was easier for them to ship from here to Fort Worth than it was from here to San Antonio, because they had to go to Austin and back to San Antonio by the railway we had. Railroad we had was the San Antonio Aransas Pass, and it came from Beeville down here and went to Falfares and turned around in Falfares and went back to Beeville, and from there it went to Austin and back to San Antonio. From Austin.
Was this railroad promoted by Mr. Lott from out of Corpus Christi?
I don't know who promoted that, Pete. I'm not familiar. I know there were the Tex-Mex was promoted by somebody in Laredo and Corpus. And,
yeah, that was Mr.
But this was, I don't know who promoted this one. They call it San Antonio Aransas Pass, or the ZAP.
Uncle Gus, could you tell us who our neighbors were at this time on the surrounding ranches, and what our relationships with them were, and vice versa?
Well, the Silkson family joined us on the east, on the north side, and also on the west side of the ranch. And then, of course, Prima was to the west of us. Bon Blucher were south of us. And King Ranch was bordered us on all along the east. with reference to relationship, it was a perfect relationship with all the ranchers around here. The King Ranch was very good neighbors. The Seligson Ranch were wonderful neighbors. I remember that they used to have corridas or roundups, and the Seligson Ranch would come and help the Canales Ranch, and then when they got through, well, they'd help the next neighbor with a roundup. And at that time, they had quite a few cowboys each one of the ranches, and it didn't take too long to round up the cattle by sharing their cowboys. Mr. King was a very good friend of my grandfather, so I heard, and the Claybrook family were also very good friends of my father, and they would trade each other horses, and sometimes they'd give each other horses, stallions or whatever any one of them needed. Well, sometimes it was a gift, another time they just traded. McGill brothers were on further south, and they were very well respected people who joined us too. And of course the Kennedys on further
Mifflin so, Kennedy Ranch.
Yes, John, Mr. John Kennedy was a very good friend of my father's, and Arthur East and Tom East, who married Mrs. Alice Claiborne. And we still have very good relations with all the ranchers joining us, the Seligsons and Bluchers, the King Ranch, the Claybergs, the East, and the Kennedys.
Uncle Gus, can you tell us a little bit about the political status, a little bit of the history on politics as you remember it when you were growing up, and what some of the laws that were passed, or some of the changes that were made concerning advancement of the town and so forth?
When my father was county commissioner, I believe it was in 24, the first highway was built through Jim Wells County, beginning in the northeast part of the county at Sandia, all the way to the Brooks County line, which went from north to south on the Jim Wells, and also from Alice to San Diego and Alice to Agua Dulce. At that time, I don't recall the number of the highway at that time, but it was built in 24 and 25, I believe. And we had pretty good elections down here, and my father served 4 years, and then he retired. I mean, he just quit, and then they had a deal made that a person from Fremont would hold it for two-year terms, and then a person from Palito Blanco would run, and he'd hold it 2 terms, and they exchanged back and forth.
Was Alice the county seat at this time?
Yes, Alice has always been the county seat of Jim Wells County. But I don't recall who the other commissioners who served with my father. I think one of them was Emerson Sane, but I'm not quite sure. It was one from Alice.
What was the population of Fremont at this time, if you can remember?
I don't know. There weren't too many people here. I guess 400 or 500 at the most.
Were there any churches here at this time, and what were the denominations that you can remember?
Well, up to by 1926 or 27, Pete, there were only two churches. One was the Methodist Church and the Catholic Church. And there was also one, they call it a Union Church at that, about 1927, they started a Union Church that was other denominations.